Welcome to the Whiskey and Roll Podcast.
Howdy. Welcome back to Whiskey and Woe. We've taken what was a significantly long break, unintended, but we did it. But we're back. For those of you who don't know, I'm Ben, and with me is David. How you doing, David?
Doing all right. Glad to finally be recording again.
Yeah, me too. So to kind of make it for lost time, we decided to do a three-piece tonight and talk about three different albums that had come out. Let's start with somebody who we've talked about his other two albums, Brent Cobb, and his fourth album, Keep 'Em on They Toes, which was released in September of 2020 on Old Buddy Records. The band was Brad Cook on bass, Jerry Pentecost on drums and percussion, Mike Harris on electric guitar and acoustic guitar, Phil Cook on electric organ, Amelia Meath on some backing vocals, Brevin Hampton on some congos, Libby Roddenbow on fiddle, and that was the majority of the players. They had a few other backing vocalists come in, like Kate Rudy. But yeah, that's pretty much the album. One thing that, having looked at the album lineup now, is that honestly, for somebody that we have praised often for his songwriting, and he did write, or at least helped co-write every song on here, and also played acoustic guitar on almost all of them, there are a lot of other additional writers on this album.
I don't have that list in front of me, but how many of those additional writers are the players on the album that maybe he's trying to get them some extra money?
It doesn't look like a lot of them, because like Little Stuff, the other, which is the last track, has Neil Medley and Oren Thornton, and they don't play anything on that. So it is not very many of the players who are listed as co-writers, okay, like at all. The only person I see who also has a playing credit is Luke Bryan, who has a piano credit, and he co-wrote Good Times and Good Love.
Okay. Well, I hate Luke Bryan, but I'm not surprised he's on this album. Because Luke Bryan was actually the person who helped get Brent Cobb his songwriting job back in the day.
Yeah.
When he was starting out. So
no, I mean, yeah, I'm the same way. I knew that we had talked about that on a couple when we did his other two albums, or maybe we did three. Anyway, we've done two or three of his albums up till now. And I was actually pretty excited for this because I think the guy's a fantastic fucking songwriter, and I really enjoyed those other two albums.
This was probably one of my most anticipated albums of last year.
Yeah. I was not very happy with it, though.
Yeah, this is when it first came out and my first listen through, it was right up there with that John Moreland album on Letdowns.
Yep, exactly. That is exactly what I was going to say. I was as let down by this as I was the John Moreland. In some ways more, honestly, even though I liked John Moreland more than I liked Brent Cobb. But I think I would go back and listen to more of that John Moreland album than I will this one.
Well, I'm not going to say that because it's been a couple of months since the album came out, and having songs pop up randomly on my shuffle playlist and stuff like that, I may have been a little too hard on it at first. Maybe I was anticipating it too much and it let me down because my expectations were too high. Maybe. But I went back after going back and listening to it the other day. It's really not that bad of an album all the way through. It's a little slow, you know. I don't want to listen to it all in a row because all the songs are pretty slow tempo and kind of melancholy. But when I hear any individual song, I don't skip it. So So maybe I had too high of expectations at first, and that was why I was so let down by it.
I mean, that's entirely possible, and I haven't listened to it other than in the album format, so that might be part of it. But, I mean, I listened to it, probably not when it first came out, but you had mentioned that we wanted to do it, and there's been a couple times that we had intended on recording, and we just didn't. So I had listened to it, and then when we finally did decide to actually sit down and record, it was a couple months later, and I listened to it again, and I still didn't like it any better than I did the first time I listened to it. Part of it was because I don't know that he's being more himself on this, or if he's playing more of a character. I felt like he was, because his accent is stronger on some of these songs. And I don't know if that's him just feeling comfortable and allowing it to come through, or if he's like trying to play it up for country radio, because this is a perfect album for country radio songs. I can imagine hearing any of these on terrestrial radio. So I couldn't get that out of my head, that it was almost like, you know, we had talked about on the previous album him trying to find his voice, and he didn't really sound the same necessarily as the same guy singing from song to song. Well, this he does sound the same. You can definitely tell it's the same guy singing, but in some ways it doesn't sound as much like him to me as some of the other stuff did, and that's probably just a me thing.
Well, I don't think it was to me it doesn't sound like something I would hear on radio country, like what you just said, because there's no clap tracks and no songs about back roads and booty shaking foot.
No, but there's a lot of songs about God and church and all that shit. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, what you said about his voice, it does sound like he was over insinuating, I guess, accent, but his voice also didn't sound as strong to me. Like when he would try to hit certain notes, it didn't sound as good as what it did on previous albums. And so I don't know what was up there. But yeah, because I mean, we talked about his first album where it sounded like he was trying to find his voice, and then the next couple after that it sounded really similar, you know, where it was like, hey, this, you know, this guy knows who he is, and then this one comes out and it's a little different. But hey, I don't know, whatever. That's kind of how songwriters are, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I will say that the playing on the album is really good. All the musicians that he had did a really good job. He's still a good songwriter, even if I didn't really care for most of these songs, because they were all put together real well.
Yeah, there's still some great lyric writing and stuff on here. So, I mean, yeah, the songwriting's still really strong, even if I don't like the sound of it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, take that for what that is. I was just let down in it, and that's okay, too. The tracks that I liked, well, there wasn't really any. I'm going to be honest. I think that some of the lyrics are still good, and the instrumentation is fine. I just, there's nothing on here that I would want to listen to again.
I mean, I did like Keep Them on the Toes, and The World Is Ending, I thought were pretty good tracks. But
yeah,
besides for that, I don't know if I'll. Like I said, I'm not going to delete it from my playlist, because when any of them come up as a shuffle, I still like it. I will not sit down and listen to the album as a whole again.
Yeah,
for sure.
Keep Them on Their Toes is by far the best track, so I'm glad you gave it some shine. And even that one, like I said, I don't necessarily want to listen again. Do you want to grade these as we go along, or just wait to the end and grade them?
We can do it as we go along, I guess.
All right. Now, you got anything else you want to say about this one?
No. Well, I didn't realize Nikki Lane was on Soapbox. Okay. Until just now.
Oh, yeah.
I really like Nikki Lane. She's somebody that we need to do in the future.
Yeah, cool. Let's do it. So I'm going to give this a D+. because there's nothing at all wrong with the playing, the songwriting. I mean, lyrically, it's fine. I just, nothing grabbed me. Actually, it was a chore to get through, honestly. I don't have the run time on it. Whatever it was, it felt like forever, and it wasn't.
It felt really long. Yeah, I don't know what it is either, but it did feel long. So, yeah, I'm higher than you are. I'm going to go a C+, but kind of for the same reasons you just said, except for the fact that, like I said, when any single song pops up on my playlist, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So
I might would feel the same way if I had it on shuffle play, honestly, because like I said, it's not that I thought the songs were terrible. It's just there's too much other good stuff out there that it.
And it was yeah. It's not that there's any bad songs really. It's just so hard to listen to them all back to back to back to back to back because they all have the same tempo and that same kind of feeling and kind of sound, you know.
Yeah, totally. So now we're going to move on to another album that came out in 2020 that we wanted to get on our list, and that is Ward Davis's Black Cats and Crows. The players on this one are Pearl Ede, backing vocals, Cody Bennett on guitars, Jim Moose Brown on guitars, piano, and he was one of the producers, Josh Brown on guitars, Ward Davis, guitars, piano, the primary artist for everything, and vocals, Steve Henson on pedal steel, Noah Hungate on drums, Scott Ian on guitar, Carol Nguyen Rabinowitz on cello. I may have messed up your name, Carol. I apologize. Matt Nolan on backing vocals, Tommy Rogers on fiddle, Mandy Schuster on bass, Ray Scott on backing vocals, and Joe Spivey on fiddle.
I mean, I love Ward Davis as a songwriter, and as an Anthrax fan, I love the fact that Scott Ian's on this album.
Yeah, me too. I didn't realize Scott Ian was even on it until I started looking over the list. I was like, holy shit, that's awesome.
I think he played guitar on Sound of Chains, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I will say this album probably had my favorite new song I heard last year on it.
Really?
Yes. The title track, Black Cats and Crows, that song gave me goosebumps the first time I heard it. And it still kind of gives me a little bit of chills every time I listen to it. It's just so well written.
This entire album is well written. I mean, this is just, I mean, and that was kind of, when we put this together, and you'll see when we get to the third act, we took people who we had done over the last year that we just praised for their songwriting and threw them all together on this list. And, you know, when you see Scott Ian's name, you expect there to be some hard-charged stuff. And the song that he mentioned that he thinks Scott Ian played on, that is a hard-charged song. This does a great job in, it's thematically coherent, but it also has a variation from song to song. So they don't all sound the same. And man, is it good.
Yeah, this come on, this album has songs about murder, songs about divorce, songs about whiskey, songs about depression.
Yeah,
what else do you want from country music?
No, dude, that's just it, man. It's this is the kind of country that I want to listen to.
Yep, exactly. And so, our previous Ward Davis album that we listened to, we kind of said it felt like the album was a showcase for the songs and not mm-hmm. the artist.
Yeah.
And I feel like this album was more of a showcase for the artist.
100% agreed.
I think this is a guy who decided instead of being a songwriter, he was going to be an artist on his own.
Yeah. Yeah. His vocals are much better on this than they were on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This album to me, there's not a bad song on this album.
No, some of the soundtracks, though, I mean, I do agree with you. I think Black Cats and Crows is probably the best song on the album. but it's just a very marginal best song on the album because I think Sound of Chains is really fucking good too.
Oh, and that song.
Yeah.
The story he tells in that song is
It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah, just amazing stuff there. Yeah. And then Good and Drunk, the last track on this album, was actually the first song I ever heard by him.
Oh, really?
And I tell you, man, that song right there, man, if you listen to that song and your eyes don't water a little, you ain't got no feelings.
Yeah. Oh, this is just that sweet spot of outlaw country, southern rock. I mean, it's just all of it heartfelt.
Yeah.
So fucking good.
Which he said most all of this album was written after his divorce.
I believe that.
And you can definitely tell that when you listen to it.
Yeah, it's an album that seems like it was written by somebody going through some shit. So.
yeah, definitely. Which I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but the track Colorado on here, he had written that song a long time ago, and Cody Jinks recorded it. And I think this was the first time he recorded it himself.
Yeah. I've probably heard the Cody Jinks version of it. I just didn't remember it. I knew it sounded familiar, but I couldn't place why. So,
yeah, him and Cody Jinks are big buddies. They are.
I believe that too.
Warren Davis is always making fun of him on Facebook. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, let's grade this thing. I'm gonna give it an A.
Yeah, hey, that's a solid A for me for sure. I love this album.
Yeah.
I've listened to this album quite a few times since it came out.
Yeah, it's blew me away. It really did. I expected it was going to be good. I didn't expect it to be this good.
Yeah, that's kind of how I was too. I mean, I had high. See, this is what we were talking about the last album. I had high hopes, and this album exceeded them. Whereas I had high hopes for the last album, and they let me down.
That's a double-edged sword, and in some ways that's a little bit unfair, but it's just the truth. And the fact that we can say that I had high hopes for this album, but this album blows it away, shows why that's not necessarily a bias. I mean, I expect every album to have three things. Good production, because there's no reason not to have a good production in 2021. I mean, fuck. I mean, everybody should be able to play their instruments. Now, if it's like a new band, I'll be like, well, okay, maybe they're not fucking virtuosos or anything. But if you are somebody who's going into your fourth or fifth album, either your band should be pretty fucking good by then for touring all the time, or if you're a solo artist, you should be bringing in some damn good studio musicians.
Right.
You know, and I said three things. I guess that was really only two. But
but here's another good conversation, though. How many times have you had high hopes for an album and they've actually been exceeded? Because I can't name but five or six, personally.
Not that many, honestly. There are some
get down more than, you know.
Yeah. Well, the thing about that, though, I think that the times that I've really found myself let down are generally because they've changed the style.
Mm, yep.
And I always consider that kind of unfair to be let down by that, because I think an artist should be able to grow and not feel constrained to write the same album over and over and over again. So when that happens, I will try to go back to it later and just go, okay. And I'm just going to use Metallica as an example here, because it's one that everybody should understand. And I don't think it happens as much in country music, because honestly, a lot of country artists do release the same albums over and over. Without as much growth. But as much as I would love for them to release something like the first four albums again, or even the Black Album, but even though the Black Album was a significant switch from the first four, that's not who they are. So I can't be mad at them for doing that, because I have seen some artists release something. Oh, I've gone back to my old style. Well, they're not that fucking person anymore, so they can't write songs like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what you just said, though, is a good example. The Black Album is a good example of a style shift that still met or exceeded expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And a couple of more examples of that would be Anthrax's Sound of White Noise.
Yep.
And Pantera's Far Beyond Driven.
Yeah.
So it can be done, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if we want to do a country example, I can't remember exactly which album it is, but when Waylon switched from the Nashville sound to start doing the outlaw stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it can happen. It is out there. And so when it's a stylistic shift, I always try to go back and go, okay, well, they just changed from what you want their fandom to be. But when I just expect, like the Brent Cobb thing, I don't really think it's that much of a stylistic shift. I just don't think it's as good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not really a huge stylistic shift for him.
Yeah, no.
It's just kind of boring.
Yeah. Yeah, John Moreland, that was a stylistic shift. And
yes, yeah. It didn't work, in my opinion.
It did not. It did not. Oh. But anyway, this is really good. And in some ways, this is a tonal shift, not necessarily a stylistic shift, but I think you're right. I think he did decide that he was going to be a performer, not just a songwriter with this album.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it, too.
All right. Lastly, we're going to talk about a guy who must not fucking sleep and must write all the goddamn time. Because it's Zach Bryan. And technically, this isn't a full album. It's only an EP. But he released it at the tail end of last year. And as we sit recording this...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's like... He put out like 30 songs last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean... So... And he's already released something else. And it's like, motherfucker. Anyway. It is Zach Bryan's Quiet Heavy Dreams... The players on it are Graham Bride on guitar, Zach Bryan, composer, guitar, vocals, Zacharina E.M. Moffat on backing vocals, Lucas Rue Jones on fiddle, Jeff Saunders on cello and double bass, and Eddie Spear was the producer.
I wonder if when they recorded this album, if they recorded it in his barn like they did the last one or not, because it sounds so much better. In the last few months, have they just learned that much more about how to record, you know?
That's a great question, and I honestly do not have an answer for that. I've assumed that it was recorded in the barn, but it might not have been, because there's like a picture of him and some girl like up on a roof. It's the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was the album cover for the last album. Never mind. So I don't know. But, yeah, it does sound better.
Yeah. I mean, my assumption was that it was still recorded in the barn. But yeah. And maybe they just got that much better. I mean, you practice recording, you're going to get better at it. So
yeah, sure. I mean, all they would really have had to do is... I mean, it could have been recorded in the barn, and they might have just put a little booth in there.
Yeah, exactly. Put up a little more, some walls to block some sound.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. But it's damn good.
Well, I recorded a guitar track one time with a blanket thrown over my amp and microphone to trap the sound in. So,
yeah. Yeah, it can definitely be done. The thing about this... And I don't know that all of these are new writing, but holy crap, this is so good.
The dude just, he has, I don't know, a way with words, I guess.
Yeah.
Man, he writes lyrics. You know, he's always talking about how his influences are Elton Felker and Jason Isbell, or, you know, those kind of guys. But man, he might be better than those guys.
I don't know that he's better than them, but he's getting damn close. he is so good at getting into the head of a character and telling that story.
Yeah, he's so good at the emotional side of the lyrics, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Elvin Felker's good at the descriptive side.
Right, right.
You know, so, but man, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm never impressed by his lyric writing in the same way that I am by Isbell's, because Isbell always writes something that just go from a writer's perspective. I'm like, oh, that's just a good combination of words, or that's like a good punch in the stomach. And Isbell also is still good at doing stuff that is emotional, but this guy is a much more visceral songwriter, and I don't admire the craft of what words he put together in the same way.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, Isbell is more of a writer's writer, I guess. Whereas this guy, you listen to him, and he's the guy that's going to give you goosebumps when you listen to his stuff, because it's just so much feeling in it.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
But man, I Lay You Down, the first track, I kept trying to figure out. Or Let You Down. I mean, I kept trying to figure out if that song was about domestic abuse or if it was just about some guy who's having a hard time in life and just struggling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not real sure what it was, but either way, it's just a fucking good song.
That's just it. He just writes fucking good songs. I mean, if there's a criticism of him, it's that they're sparse. That, you know, and I don't want to say that there's a sameness in them, that they all sound the same, but they're all kind of built the same way, effectively. Mm-hmm. But he's so fucking good at it that I don't even hold that against him, because I can sit there. Right.
That's the thing. I don't even care, because he's so good at it.
Yeah. I mean, we
were talking about that. How working with a good producer would do him wonders, because he's not good at like introing or outroing songs. And you know, he could use a little help with some song structure, even though he's such a good writer. He could still use a little help with some structure in there.
100%. Everything sounds like you're sitting on the front porch and just fucking listening to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's part of what makes him so appealing.
I think so too.
You know, and I kind of think he knows that, and I think that's why he's not wanting to go out and work with big producers and sign a contract, and he's still keeping his military job. And
I mean, well, that's part of it. He's still in the military, and the more complex you make the songs, and the people you have to bring in and put together a band, and he probably just likes playing with his friends, and I respect the shit out of that.
Yeah, just. Okay, do what you want to do, have fun doing it, and it'll show, you know?
Yeah.
You can tell the difference between somebody who's enjoying what they're doing and somebody who's just doing it to make money.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. And as long as the dude's two albums and like an EP in to his career.
So, I mean, in a year.
Well, in like 16 months, because I think that like the first album did technically come out the end of 2019, but and it's just like, holy crap, dude. I mean, as we've said, I don't know if he had a bunch of this stuff saved up, if this is just, he's just so fucking prolific that he wakes up and writes a song a day. I don't know, but damn, he's good.
But I mean, he's constantly putting stuff on YouTube, though, you know, new tracks that he, new songs or whatever that end up not making the albums. It's ridiculous.
It is.
Yeah, I wish I could write like that.
Yeah. I wouldn't even care if I was as good as him. I just wish I could write as prolifically as that, because eventually I would get
good. Yeah, eventually you would write something good. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So Anyway, good tracks on here. They're all good. I like the title track, Quiet Heavy Dreams, quite a bit. Birmingham is great. Let You Down, like David said. November Air. I mean,
I think Crooked Teeth was my favorite song.
Really?
Something about the way the drums fit into that song. That just, man, I don't know. I really like that track.
Yeah. Well, they're all fucking good. Again.
Yeah, no, solid album, top to bottom.
Time to grade it. Oh gosh. I guess I'm gonna have to give it an A2.
Yeah.
I thought about just giving it a B+ because it's an EP, but fuck it, I'm gonna give it an A.
A. It's so good.
Yeah.
I probably like the Warren Davis a little bit better, but man, they're right on the same level.
I would listen to them in different occasions, but both of them have really emotional songs, and both of them are right into that, you know, the strike zone of what I like. Yep. But I would probably put, and not that I'm doing this, of course, but if I wanted to put on an album for a party or a get together with some friends, I would put on the Warren Davis. If I just wanted to listen to something in my room or while I was driving somewhere, I would listen to the Zach Bryan.
I can see that.
Just because the Zach Bryan just feels more intimate than the Warren Davis does, you know. And honestly, the stuff on the Warren, there are some party or tracks that are more appropriate for partying than, not that you can't just get drunk to anything, but you know what I'm
saying. Yeah, it's got some more kind of up tempo, yeah, with the distorted guitars, and then, you know.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, that's it. Three albums by three really good songwriters.
Yep. And there was a bunch more that came out that we missed, so.
There was, yeah. Gave us a little bit of backlog to work through before we can even get to some stuff that's coming out this year.
Yeah, because here in just a couple of weeks, there's a new Morgan Wade album coming out, and I am super stoked for that.
Yeah. Well, and I also want us to talk about, if for no other reason than to talk about the situation behind it, talk about Steve Earle's latest album, JT.
So, oh, yeah, the one where he does all his Sun songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll decide on what we're going to do, and we'll try and get back to posting at least every couple of weeks. If not weekly, we'll probably try to do
weekly. Yeah, fucking life getting in the way and shit.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.